are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, I know the kind of brother and sister that you is, you're going to get it done anyway, because you know it has to get done. So quit being lazy. Quit being trifling. Quit procrastinating. Get it done. After all, it is Kwanzaa time, and that's a good time to get stuff done as far as I'm concerned. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa Imposed, and click on that for all the previous recorded programs that are dated and titled. We appreciate that. Other programming here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. All times are going to give our Eastern times. Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming from Philadelphia. And then right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesday, from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, Revive. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it ain't me. It is Sister POC with her program, once again, Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until it is Time for an Awakening, once again, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. It's the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. And if you don't want to go to the website and you're living in the Atlanta area, you can stop in the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall where they sell their products that are produced by us. Laundry detergent, batteries, shavers, all kinds of good stuff. Go online and check them out. WeBuyBlack. .com. Brother Bomani Tahembe, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani just came back last month, taking about 40 brothers and sisters to Ghana. And of course, he has his trip coming up in May 2019. And so I'll have him on real soon so he can talk about how you can begin to put your monies together and you can make that trip to Ghana. If you want to check out, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see photos of the previous trips, the one he just had just came back from last month. Go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of the previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Books. It's better than a book. Better than a book than a well-built house. Better than a book than a memorial plaque in the temple, because what is written is for eternity. And I know a lot of our people don't read, but still books are necessary and important to help us understand and gain the consciousness that we need. One place here in Atlanta is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located on Ralph David Abernathy in the West End. They have books, they have artwork, they have furniture, they have clothing, they have the green, red, black, and green shoes. They have those. And you come here, anything that you want, if they don't have your size, they'll get them. And that's at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Also at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, they have a history class every Saturday. Every Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., they have a history class with Baba Olatunji. And, of course, they have the multimedia library, brothers and sisters, a digital resource of over 100,000 files on American, African, and African history and culture, 15,000 video files, 15,000 images, 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books, over 4.5 terabytes of enlightenment. Wow, that's a lot. I'm going to get that. I need it. More books. Also in the Greenbrier Mall is the Medu Bookstore. Medu means writing. Netcher means writing of the gods. That's what we used to call that's what the Greeks call a hieroglyph, the Medu Netcher. But we have the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. If you go there and they don't have the book you want, believe me, they'll get it for you. Done it for me a number of times. Also another bookstore is Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. And my good brother Jamu, there's Light in the Black Dot. They also have the red, black, and green shoes. And Kwanzaa will be there. We're having Kwanzaa at the Shrine on the 27th, which is Kuji Chagalia. Kwanzaa, of course, starts the 26th. On the 27th is Kuji Chagalia. And we are sponsoring, we meaning ASCAC, WADU, and Us Lifting Us, and numerous other organizations will be there. In fact, the Us Lifting Us band, which is a group of brothers and sisters that will come together and jam. And boy, did we jam this past Tuesday. Man, I was really impressed, especially with Brother Kevin Spears on the kalimba. Outstanding. Brothers and sisters, go online to YouTube and put the brother's name in. Brother Kevin Spears, kalimba. Outstanding. And others. So we're having Kwanzaa, and then on the 29th, I'll be hosting Kwanzaa at the Black Dot Cultural Center, and the guest speaker will be Baba Mwalimu Baruti, Baba Baruti, and I'm really anxious and honored to do that. So those two Kwanzaa, but there's other Kwanzaas. We'll talk about that on Monday when we talk about, on the 24th, when we talk about Christmas and Kwanzaa. I ain't going to do no us versus them. I'm just going to lay it out because that's how we do. So our daily Yesi Sansim. Yesi. In Yesi Sim, which is a daily revolutionary thought. Daily revolutionary thought. And we're going to go with this one. Today is the 21st, December 21st, by Bishop Henry Turner McNeil. Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, the one who says, I believe that God is black. God's got to be black, because if God is a white man, there is no hope. Whew. December 21st. We do not believe that there is any hope for a race of people who do not believe that they look like God. This is Baba Baruti. This is a book from Baba Baruti, Yesesim, of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And he does some narratives. And so after I say the quote, then this is Baba Baruti's writing. The cosmic sea is black. Carbon is black. Melanin is black. The richest earth is black. The color containing all other colors is black. The ink that our ancestors recorded truth on the papyrus was black. Beauty is black. The world's hardest diamonds are black. Imhotep, the world's first multi-genius, was black. Carbon, the most fundamental element in the universe, is black. Our deities are black. The Capra beetle is black. Night, the time of spiritual meditation, is black. Petroleum, the world's most abundant and practical hydrocarbon energy source, is black. Amargi, misnamed Lucy, mother of all humanity, was black. The most regal panther and strongest ants are black. The world's first iron smelters were black. Light is most visible in black. Energy is black. The cap and collar of the chambers in the pyramids were originally black. The Cushites, the Chemites, and all other ancient Africans were black. Untainted, our skin is still black. And we know that the primordial waters from which the universe sprung were black. So why wouldn't the Creator be black? Affirm, I am divinely black. Affirm, I am divinely black. They should say something. Oh, I forgot to announce Cafe Ulu. My bad. Sorry about that, Akina. Cafe Ulu. Ulu, Us Lifting Us. Every Thursday night, they have their broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789 for the broadcast of Us Lifting Us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. We like to say family economics, family-centered economics. And you can go on the website to usliftingus.com. We pulled our monies together and we created Cafe Ulu. Cafe Ulu located 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, open Monday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we sell coffee. That's right. We have coffee from the motherland, Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, and, of course, where coffee originated, Ethiopia. We also have coffees from the Nicaragua, Papua New Guinea, Panama, Brazil. We have coffee, and we also have loose teas, and everything that is sold at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. Everything. And also one of the favorite drinks is Ambrosia, good brother, Brother Novak Young. Ambrosia, which is a vitality drink with hibiscus, ginger, turmeric, chlorophyll, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina, all that good vitality drink. But Ambrosia, which is sold at Cafe Ulu. So my brothers, go online, order some coffee. More importantly, become a member, become a contributor, buy a share. We need each other. This will not happen unless we come together to make sure that it happens. Today is the 21st, of course, that is the day, shortest day of the year, the winter solstice, and of course, then 3 days after this day will be the 25th when the sun starts to once again makes its rise, you know, and I'll be talking about that again this on Monday's program. But today I'm going to talk about the history of Kwanzaa, the history of Kwanzaa, the brothers and sisters that helped put it together. And I know that for many of us, the only thing that you do see in print is what Malana Karinga created, you know, in 1966. But of course, Malana Karinga is toward the draws with a bunch of people in terms of his behavior and what he has done. In fact, the Caucasian, I was on a program a few years ago supporting and advocating Kwanzaa because one of the Wisconsin legislators was blasting it. And then this real conservative Caucasian, you know, he got a Negro to with him, Jesse Lee Peterson, if you know who that Negro is, both of them blasting Kwanzaa. And me and this other brother were defending it. And I got to give the other brother much love, whose name is Claiborne Benson in Milwaukee, with the Wisconsin Black Historical Society, who has kept Kwanzaa alive for the last, in our community, for the last 30-something years. Yeah. In fact, the first day of Kwanzaa is at the Wisconsin Black Historical Society. Then it alternates some other places, particularly. And the last day of Kwanzaa is at the African American Women's Center with my good friend and sister, Josephine Hill. So good shout out to them. But in that discussion, they were blasting Kwanzaa, and I'm a defender, big defender of Kwanzaa, because Kwanzaa is the most important holiday. In fact, the most important thing that we can do for African people, because why? It talks about the principles that we should be instilling in our everyday lives. It celebrates who we are. It celebrates our culture. It brings our people together. There's nothing more important, as far as I'm concerned. But we have two people with us. We have one brother with us who has been on the program a number of times before, and that is my good brother, Bashir Mchawi. Brother Mchawi, how are you doing?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. Thank you once again for being with us to talk about the importance and the origins and the history of Kwanzaa and so forth. And we also have a sister with us, a sister who is with us, lifting us, and works at the cafe periodically. And she's just a beautiful sister, and that is Sister Akina. Sister Akina, how are you this morning?
Greetings. I'm wonderfully well. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing fine. We're going to talk about some of the history of Kwanzaa and how it began, and we're also going to talk about Queen Mother of Kwanzaa and from the Bay Area and that particular history, because our people need to know. Hey, I need to know. And as you just heard me state, I'm very adamant about Kwanzaa. I believe it's very important that we celebrate Kwanzaa. You know, Malana Karinga notwithstanding, you know, because some of the people who have don't want to celebrate Kwanzaa for various reasons. It's a substitute for Christmas. It's not religious. It's this, that, or the other, you know. But I think that Kwanzaa is a very important holiday for our people. What do you have to say, Brother Mchawi?
Well, I'm in agreement. I think that there are people who have, for instance, criticisms of Dr. Karinga. Some of those criticisms, I think, are valid. However, sometimes we have to separate the creator from the creation. And in this particular instance,
I say,
I don't think that, we have to, be Karinga specific in our celebration of Kwanzaa. And of course, I believe this for a number of reasons. You know, one of the major reasons is that when Kwanzaa was founded in 1966, at the US organization, as an example, Dr. Karinga himself says there were seven children who were present at that first Kwanzaa celebration. And that's why Kwanzaa, one of the reasons why Kwanzaa has seven letters, because each of the children made, they used some kuumba, some creativity with one of the letters. And since there were seven children, they had seven letters. Now, not that long after that, Dr. Karinga was incarcerated. And well, when he was incarcerated, Kwanzaa was still, not very widely known or not very widely celebrated. When Dr. Karinga came out of jail, Kwanzaa had spread not only over the United States, but throughout the Caribbean and Africa. And that there are many brothers and sisters and organizations who are responsible for that. And very often those brothers and sisters, as you're saying, with the Queen Mother, do not necessarily get the credit that they should actually get in regards to the spreading of Kwanzaa. And we have to say also providing some literal meat and muscle to a skeleton, which was all that Dr. Karinga had created back in 1966.
Okay.
Now, when he got out of prison and he saw what had happened, he determined that he needed to actually, provide a little more information, and he actually did so. But by that time, as we would have to say, the horse had left the barn, and people all over the world were running with Kwanzaa and doing things. And one of the things we have to understand is that there's going to be sometimes a little difference in regards to the way that Kwanzaa is celebrated. And we have to understand that there's no one single way to celebrate Kwanzaa. And I think that's important because, we get too doctrinaire.
Right.
Then we get, too hung up on, procedures and things which are not that significant. The significance is the fact that, we can come together as a community, that we can do some things collectively, that we have 7 days to reflect on our values, on some principles and a value system. And we know that that's one of the things that our people sorely need. We need values. We need a value system, because the condition we find ourselves in is based upon the fact that we both individually and collectively do not have proper values to go ahead and empower us as we do what we do on a day-to-day basis.
That is a fact. That is a fact. That's why I'm a staunch advocate of Kwanzaa and instilling the seven principles in our daily lives. Because if we had unity and self-determination and collective work and responsibility and cooperative economics and purpose and creativity and that faith in that, we would be a better off people. That would transform our community. That would transform the African world. So, I mean, to me, it is vitally important that we begin to embrace Kwanzaa on a daily basis, not just from December 26th to January 1st, you know.
No question. You know, I think it's important that we understand, you know, some people talk about the seven principles of Kwanzaa. You know, we have to talk about the, you know, the Nguza Samba as those principles which we guide our lives by every day.
Yeah, I know that our good friend Marimba Ani, Dr. Marimba Ani, Mama Marimba, sent out last year and again this year saying that the Nguza Saba, which of course is the principles of Kwanzaa, we need a sovereigntess, since we are a sovereignty-seeking people, and that's what we should be, you know, interpretation of the Nguza Saba. And I'll read them. I'll read those later. But there are other people who are instrumental in spreading the gospel of Kwanzaa, and that is Queen Mother of Kwanzaa. Sister Akina, can you shed some light on this sister?
Definitely. It's part of my privilege and honor to do so. Queen Mother of Kwanzaa is our ancestor. At the time, we called her Sister Makenya, and then many of us who, you know, are accustomed to greeting our elders as Mama, so you'll hear me use it interchangeably, Sister Makenya or Mama Makenya. But I was in the Bay Area, born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was just very blessed and fortunate to have a relationship with her where she mentored us and guided us around the principles of the Nguza Saba and introducing the rituals of Kwanzaa into our community celebrations. Now, there's the history on that is what is so important that we share, somewhat of what you two brothers were just talking about, how there was a period of time where, you know, this was not embraced in our community when it was first introduced in the 60s. There was a lot of conflict that had come out of, you know, the struggles between the Black Panther Party and US organization and the whole COINTEL, you know, disruption in our community. So how were we still able to take from all of that division? How did we come back with this conflict, with this unifying concept of Kwanzaa and the Nguza Saba being able to spread all over? So many, many folks, Queen Mother Makenya being one of them, she had she was invited by Dr. Karanga to get information directly because, particularly in the Bay Area, the Black Panther movement was very strong, and you needed people who could be the bridge and bring the information out for individuals who did not want to embrace anything coming out of us, but had an understanding that some things are bigger than a personality or one particular organization, that this concept, these principles were really universal and strong and needed to be spread. So she had the opportunity to interview him and learn directly from him in 1966 and 67. And at that time, she was president of the Associated Student of Merritt College. That's in Berkeley, Oakland, California. And so what she did was she took the information that she had learned, wrote it all out, put it on those good old-fashioned machines. Now I just forgot the name of it again, but some of you can call it out.
Yeah, those machines, you turn it and it stamps out. Yeah.
Yeah, you had the little like blue paper underneath it, the little carbon paper. And she wrote out all the information that she had learned in terms of the principles and made it her business, her charge, to share that in the Bay Area. And she had a great platform to do it because of being a part of Merritt College. And then at Merritt College, there was a strong Black student union as well. And members of that group also included folks who then formed a Kwanzaa awareness group association. One of those persons that I also was very blessed to learn from later on is Minister Makalisi Oso-Sowande, who he and another brother there, they established a spiritual movement, which became the Wose Community Church and later the House of Amun-Ra. So there were platforms where groups of people were able to get this information, delivered to them. Queen Mother, what she did was actually partnered up with another brother, and I wish I knew last names. I think that's part of the charge that we have now is to compile this and make sure it's properly recorded. But there was another brother that she would always tell us about, named Brother Fred, I think it was his name. And she said they would get in their car, I think it was a Volkswagen Beetle, something like that, and they would drive all over the country to disseminate this information and to, teach the rituals and the ceremony of it. So, driving around in November, December is not an easy time to be on the road. But that was their level of commitment, to getting this information out. So, I wish that I did have a map that I could just put up on the wall and ask people from these various states across the United States, did you learn this from Mama McKenna and Brother Fred, or where did you get it from? Mm-hmm. Because we know that that was part of what she did. She also, not only teaching it at the college and using that platform, but having a little bit of budget to help support her travels later, she went internationally. And it's said that she traveled to over 15 countries and spread the word of Kwanzaa. So, and that's why we're saying.
See, that's why we need to know Mama McKenna, because I have never heard of her until I talked to you the other day, and you did a presentation at the pre-Kwanzaa that we had, and it was beautiful.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And the way she would do it, when I first met her at Wose, which was in the 80s, every year Wose Community Church hosts a huge community Kwanzaa celebration, and she would walk in with such grace and power and authority, knowing who she was, grounded as an African woman and all the knowledge that she had, and at the same time open and humble and sweet and welcoming to everyone. And she would share that information with us. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes the young people, you're dismissing everything. You're not understanding what you're getting, the nuggets of information that you're getting at that time. So, I just give thanks that she was consistently doing this every year, not only coming to the Wose Community Kwanzaa, she'd go over to East Palo Alto, California. That was a very empowered community. They renamed themselves Nairobi, the city of Nairobi. But she traveled around, in the Bay Area. And the thing that she did specifically in the Bay Area was to establish the community houses of Kwanzaa. Mm-hmm. So, and this was, based on my recollection, about 1967-68. So remember, Kwanzaa was only started in 1966.
Right.
And so here, that next year and the following year, she had already had the vision to know this has to become institutionalized. This
right.
has to not just be some type of a festival that comes and goes. It's much bigger than that. And so what she taught us was that you have to have the community houses of Kwanzaa that start where? When we say houses, in your home with your family.
Right.
So she said on the first night of Kwanzaa that one family would invite six other families to come and celebrate Kwanzaa together. And then that second night, another group that came to that would invite six new families, so that every night there would be six new families learning about Kwanzaa, not the same group doing it repeatedly each evening together. Well, what happened is, you know, as very social people, it just grew phenomenally quick. And so it went from those community houses of Kwanzaa, because you just couldn't contain anyone, to actually having community center, community-wide Kwanzaa
right.
celebrations,
exactly.
which is where groups like WOSE came into, because they would not only have it at their church, but take it to large community centers like at that time it was called the East Oakland Youth Development Center. And over in San Francisco, Wajumbe Center, I'm trying to think of their official name, but that was a museum and a cultural center over there that would host Kwanzaa celebrations that were big, open to everyone. The Pan-African People's Organization would host a big Kwanzaa celebration, and they were one of the organizations that was running independent schools. So, you know, you had a great way to make sure that the children were being taught year-round about Kwanzaa, about the Nguza Saba, and understanding that we're going to culminate these teachings with a great celebration for the whole community at the end of the year.
I say.
And like I said, she traveled everywhere with it. And not only that, she taught specific rituals to reinforce the learning. And like the brother was saying earlier, we all have different ways that we can make it feel close, near, and dear to our heart, that
right.
it works with our family. And I know you have some people that just feel it's one way or it's wrong. I don't embrace that concept, because I think that that's kind of counter to what the Nguza Saba talks about, which is what Kuji Tagalia, we are self-determined to defining and create and speak to for ourselves, and that Kuumba, that principle of creativity. So, you know, I think having our foundation, you know, understanding what the symbols are and the meanings behind those, but being able to make it yours,
right,
in the
and
way
that what,
works for your family,
right, exactly,
is
that's
very
what I've,
important.
And that's what I've done over the years. My first contact of Kwanzaa, even before I changed my name, was back in the late 70s, and was at someone's home. And then from that time on, we've had outstanding community celebrations of Kwanzaa. I mean, some of them were really elaborate, put some good money into bringing folks from Chicago to perform in Milwaukee, and utilizing the talent that was in Milwaukee. You know, and I'm quite sure the same thing was happening. I mean, you've talked very eloquently, Sister Akina, about the left coast, but now we're going to go over to the right coast. Okay. And talk about the Kwanzaa celebrations that happened in New York. And I know one person that Brother Mchawi talks about, and that is a good brother who I knew, and that is G2 Owaiusi and his organizations. And how was Kwanzaa celebrated on the East Coast?
Well, you know, first I just want to, you know, raise up the name of some of the people who you know, did work and, you know, kept Kwanzaa alive and did things, as I said. The first Kwanzaa book I remember was written not by Dr. Karenga, but by Brother John Watusi Branch, who later founded the African Poetry Theater, had been a member of the East, and that's where he actually learned a lot and, you know, determined how he was going to actually go ahead and practice Kwanzaa, and was inspired to go ahead and open an institution in Queens. Which he did, an organization known as the African Poetry Theater. He's an ancestor now, and, you know, we need to raise his name up. One of the people who was instrumental in creating aspects of Kwanzaa which could be remembered. Because one of the things at the East we did, several years we did 7 days of Kwanzaa celebrations at the East, you know, at the institution, which meant that we were clear that those of us who were there doing the programs, that we were not necessarily going to really enjoy it as much as we could, because, I mean, to go ahead and do Kwanzaa for 7 days is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, folks who do, you know, Kwanzaa organizations who do a community Kwanzaa for 1 day know that that's a lot of work. But to go ahead and do 7 days of activities
yeah.
is monumental. So we knew that, well, it was a sacrifice, but at the same time, we would be planting seeds which would sprout and grow all over. One of the things that we did, we had a brother named Baba Yusuf Iman. And Baba Yusuf Iman created a series of songs. He created a song for the seven principles. He created a song about praising the red, the black, and the green. And we would sing these particular songs. These songs were used not only in terms of Kwanzaa, but at our school at Uhuru Sasa. And it became a way for our children to remember the significance of the red, black, and green, and to remember all of the seven principles. So once we went ahead and we, you know, the community learned the songs, the children learned the songs, it would literally be imprinted on their consciousness. And this is something that Baba Yusuf Iman did. You know, he was a spirit man. One of the things that sometimes people don't, you know, associate with Kwanzaa is some kind of spirituality. And since we as African people are spiritual people, sometimes, you know, we have to acknowledge that there can be a kind of spiritual kind of way to conduct Kwanzaa. Because for many people, you know, that's critically important. You know, it's one of the reasons why we have so many churches in our community. If we weren't spiritual people, we wouldn't have a church on every block. But we do. So that particular aspect of us has to be addressed some kind of way. And it was somebody like Baba Yusuf Iman who did that. We at the East, we did Kwanzaa on a number of different levels. Prior to Kwanzaa, we would go out and we would educate the community. We would have presentations on Kwanzaa. There were a number of individuals. You know, I would have a Kanara and candles and an Mkeka and everything. I would have all of the Kwanzaa paraphernalia in the trunk of my car. And I would be driving around all up and down the East Coast, you know, going to homes and institutions, educating people about Kwanzaa. And we did this, you know, first, you know, as the East, we determined that it was something that we needed to embrace. We needed to embrace an alternative for our people to Christmas. You know, Christmas became crazy. You know, as we all know, it has, for most people, not much to do, if anything, to do with the birth of Christ. You know, it has to do with crass materialism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is why, you know, we know that, you know, I mean, if you think about, you know, all of the money that people in our community spend from misgiving, as we call it, as opposed to Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. from misgiving all the way until January 1st, I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
And most of that is spent around this idea of Christmas, where, you know, people embrace it too often. An image of Jesus who is a European who had absolutely nothing to do, you know, with Palestine, where, you know, Jesus was from, a Santa Claus, you know, another white guy who's supposed to come into, you know, our community and leave gifts for our children, which we know, you know, with white supremacy as it is and racism as it is, it would not happen. You know, these particular kinds of mythologies are dangerous. So we decided that we wanted to go ahead and do something else, that it was necessary to provide for our children, for our loved ones, for our community, an alternative. So we embraced Kwanzaa. And as you said, Baba Jitu Weyusi, the founder, leader of the East Organization, was instrumental. We then went ahead and became part of the Congress of African People. And we have to raise the name of Baba Miri Baraka because, you know, Baba Miri, as the chairman of the Congress of African People, you know, we determined that Kwanzaa was going to be something that all of the organizations in Congress of African People were going to embrace. And, I mean, there were organizations, I can't even remember all of the organizations who were part of Congress of African People. I mean, I need to revisit that. But, you know, there were organizations in Philadelphia, in Chicago, in Houston, Texas, in Los Angeles, in Oakland. I mean, just all over the place, mm-hmm. you know, folks who were part of the Congress of African People. So each of these particular organizations, you know, would learn from each other. We had a number of instruments that we could use to educate people. I remember one thing we did is, since we had East Publishers, we put out a Kwanzaa brochure, a four-page Kwanzaa brochure, which had what is Kwanzaa, where is Kwanzaa from, how do you celebrate Kwanzaa, what are all the symbols of Kwanzaa, and we distributed this freely. You know, whoever wanted it, they could get it. You know, we mailed it in some instances around the country so people would have some kind of idea of what Kwanzaa was. Black News, of which I was the editor, that was our news magazine, we would always have a Kwanzaa issue. And in the Kwanzaa issue, we would have a lot of information about Kwanzaa. So as we went ahead and did these particular things, news of Kwanzaa spread. Still today, I mean, it's kind of ironic that there are folks who are relatively up in age who don't know anything about Kwanzaa right. or who never celebrated Kwanzaa.
You're right.
And this is kind of amazing because, you know, at a particular time, you know, Kwanzaa was spreading like wildfire. I mean, I have to say, I did my radio program on radio station WBAI in New York last night, and we had numbers of people from the tri-state area who were talking about Kwanzaa events. Brother Ras Baraka, who is the son of Baba Miri Baraka, who is the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, is having Kwanzaa at City Hall. They're going to do a whole Kwanzaa celebration and a karamu at City Hall. So, you know, we see how Kwanzaa is spreading. We've got Kwanzaa celebrations in just about every borough in New York, in New Jersey. And as a matter of fact, we could have gone further on. We have in Yonkers, in Westchester, New York. We know that there are people around the country who are celebrating Kwanzaa, you know, staunch supporters of Kwanzaa, who do it every year, have been doing it for a long time. And we have to say that at this particular point, we're at least three and four generations deep as far as those who celebrate Kwanzaa. So it's, for instance, let's say myself, my children, my grandchildren, you know, they all, you know Kwanzaa because most of them came into the world right. understanding Kwanzaa and embracing that as opposed to embracing Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's important because the idea of the transmission, you know, of what we do, which, of course, is part of, you know, when we define culture, you know, we talk about things that we do that are transmitted from generation to generation, that, you know, once we go ahead and it's embraced by our children and then embraced by their children and then embraced by their children, then we know that we're on the right track.
No doubt.
Because we've created something that is lasting and that is beyond, you know, just our physical presence here on Earth. And these things, of course, become critically, critically important because this is how we know that Kwanzaa will continue and, you know, that for the most part, it appears to be in relatively good hands. Many of the people in the Newark area who are now promulgating Kwanzaa and doing Kwanzaa programs, as I said, are our children and grandchildren, and these in many instances are young people who came into Kwanzaa as infants. Some of them came into Kwanzaa before they were born, you know, as we talk about how consciousness is transmitted to the yet unborn. And it's important because it becomes organic for them. It becomes natural. So when we started Kwanzaa, for us, in some instances, it might not have been natural. You know, it was something that we were assuming, something that we were creating. But as we created it and as we transmitted it to the next generation, it became organic and natural. So these young people, they go ahead and it's like, hey, you know, that's all I know, Kwanzaa.
Right.
I don't know anything else but. For their children, and, you know, as we move, you know, further in time, you know, it means that we have created something clearly of value.
You know, I've been involved in Kwanzaa for quite a long time. In Milwaukee, they've been celebrating, you know, far longer than when I first started, because I didn't start until the 70s, you know, but have embraced it totally. But the reality is that I, you know, on the 50th anniversary in 2016, you know, I was fortunate enough to, on Kujichagulia, to just make a brief presentation on basically stating that we're no closer to self-determination as a people, as African people, on that day than we were 50 years ago. And that is because we've been so fragmented, and the fact that there are some of us who don't want to hear about Kwanzaa, who could give less than rats, you know, about Kwanzaa, haven't embraced it. And also, too, that challenge of Christmas or Kwanzaa. And because of that particular challenge, there were some people who, no, I can't let go Christmas. My baby got to have a Christmas, you know, even though they don't believe in the theology of it, because that's not true. But the concept of Christmas, of gift getting and gift giving, particularly here in America or really around the world, because that's the big commercial holiday that it is. And so we were saying, well, yeah, you can celebrate Christmas on December 25th and then the next day go out and celebrate Kwanzaa. You know? And so the reality is that is still the mindset, unfortunately. That's why I developed a piece where you can incorporate, how can we incorporate these Kwanzaa principles into our everyday lives to make that change. I'll mention that when we come back from the break. Sister Akina, I'm going to get you when we come back from the break, okay? We're having a great conversation here, brothers and sisters. And you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. This break, the music is from The Principles, the seven principles by Kwame Cobb and Shavin Dukkha out of Chicago. In fact, they came to one of our Kwanzaa presentations and performed in Milwaukee. They are outstanding, and this is an outstanding piece. And if you can't go to the record store to get it, just go online to listen to it. Seven Principles. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
It's been the same since we began. Each day in life, we're on a mission to resurrect our greatness once again. In this we find purpose.
Find our purpose.
Everything in life truly has its purpose.
Has its purpose.
The wisdom of creation is in its purpose. Every day we live, we will be on purpose.
Be on purpose.
Live this and grow wise.
We got to know our purpose, our meaning.
Oh yeah.
We got to know our purpose, our meaning. We got to know our purpose, our meaning.
Every day now.
Dedicated to the fifth principle, the principle of purpose, them I call it Nia. Say African people celebrating Kwanzaa, beginning on the 26th of December. Say me chat it in the roof, me dash it in the coach. Cause I'm not the mic, me ya the field marshal. With the man Steve Kopp and Chavin Duca. The purpose of our mission, you find it in Nia. I tell you black people, say you must understand. Say each and every one of us, we're all African. We're coming from the roots and from the foundation. If you understand Nia, then you know our mission. That money could buy, the richer were to live and the poor were to die. You never miss the water till the well run dry. You never know a good thing until you try. Say you're spitting at the second, I go falling at your eye. A life will make you laugh and life will hit to make you cry. Like an African eagle, say your dreams are them a fly. Have a purpose in life until the day that you die.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Kwame Cobb and Chavin Duca out of Chicago and their CD, Seven Principles. Outstanding. I mean, that sister's voice is just really beautiful when she does Imani Faith. That's just a beautiful song. Other programming here on the Motherland, on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays After my program, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. And right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. On Friday from 8 p.m. until it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Another announcement is disaster awareness for community preparedness every Friday from 4 to 6. Disaster awareness for community preparedness with my good brother, Brother Yosef Muhammad. And the number to call is 563. It's on Blog Talk, 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. We're going to go back and talk about the beginnings of Kwanzaa and brothers and sisters involved in Kwanzaa and how Kwanzaa has evolved and some of the things that we do today centered around Kwanzaa. As I stated, I think that Kwanzaa is a key for African people's revitalization and coming into our own. That's how I look at Kwanzaa. It is a key. And I advocate Kwanzaa not just December 26th through January 1st, but pretty much all year round. I talk about the transformation through the Kwanzaa principles. You know, they talk about the number 13 has a bad number. The number 13 that, you know, Friday the 13th, some office buildings doesn't have a 13th floor. There are some airlines that had no 13th row because they wanted to put into the mind of us that the number 13 is a bad number, evil number, you know. But nothing could be furthest from the truth, because the people who took this country, I ain't talking about Puritans and pilgrims. I'm talking about the Caucasian men who are the so-called founding fathers, who were Freemasons, who had the knowledge that we once possessed, that they have co-opted and take it for themselves. So they knew that the number 13 was a number, a great number, the number of transformation. In fact, that's why they established 13 colonies. Why not 10? Why not 12? Why not 15? Those are good numbers. Why did they have 13? Because they knew the number 13 was a number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle. 13 begins anew. That's why on the dollar, they have, you know, the symbol on the dollar. There are 13. The number 13 is repeated on the dollar bill 13 times. 13 steps in the pyramid. 13 arrows on the eagle in his talon. 13 olive branch leaves. 13 stripes in his breastplate. I mean, 13 letters in E Pluribus Unum. Why 13? Because the number 13 is the number of transformation. How many disciples did Jesus have? 13 plus Jesus. How many signs in a zodiac? 12 plus the sun. How many mythical knights at the round table with King Arthur? And believe me, there's still people who believe King Arthur was real. 12 plus King Arthur, 13. You see, how many jurors on a trial? 12 jurors plus the judge, 13. So this number 13 is not a bad number. No, it is a great number because it is a number of transformation. 12 completes the cycle, 13 begins the new. So then how can we utilize the number 13 into our daily lives so we can transform ourselves and our community to be the best that we can be and move forward? Number one, you take the seven principles of Umoja, unity, Kujichagulia, self-determination, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, Ujima, collective work responsibility, Ujamaa, cooperative economics, Nia, purpose, Kumba, creativity, and Imani, faith. You have seven. Now you take those seven and add to the seven the five C's. And the first C is consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, who you are historically. Consciousness. I mean, you know who you are. You know where you came from. You know who your people are. You know the landmass that you came from. Consciousness. The next C, because once you have consciousness, you develop courage. You have courage. You feel good about yourself. You know, you feel like you can challenge anything and overcome. You have courage. Then the third C, confidence. Because you have the consciousness and the courage, you have confidence, not ego. You ain't tripping. You have confidence, healthy confidence. Know you can pass the test or you can get the job, the promotion, or do whatever because you have that kind of confidence. The next C, conscience. Knowing what is morally right and doing what is right. Standing on principle, standing on integrity. I often say when I do this presentation, I don't have any money because I don't. Brother Oshie don't have no money. But what I do have is my name. I stand on principle. I stand on integrity. I try my best to be a man of my word. I try my best to be the best man I can be to our people, particularly to our sisters and to our children. Standing on principle, conscience, knowing what is morally right and wrong, and doing what's right. Doing what's right when nobody's looking. Standing on that kind of principle. And then the last C, conviction. Many people who have conviction, they know that whatever roadblock, detour, pitfall is put into their path, they will overcome them because they have a conviction. Yes, they wanted to be a doctor or a nurse or a firefighter, whatever it was. It didn't happen that first time, but because of their willingness to make the sacrifices to overcome and to put in the work, then they finally realize it. It happens because they have conviction. So now, you put the seven principles of unity, self-determination, collective responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. Add to those seven the five C's of consciousness, courage, confidence, conscience, and conviction. 7 + 5 is how much? 12 plus you is 13. And if we put 13 into our everyday lives, imagine what we could do to transform not just our community, but transform this world. Sister Ikena, I appreciate you hanging in there with us.
Yes, yes. One of the things that I've heard us speaking on is how this has, children have been born into this. We now have, you know, second and third generation. And part of why that happens is they were immersed in community where it exists, where it's a natural part of that community. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to talk about some of the institutions in the San Francisco Bay Area that made that possible. You know, as we speak on the history of Kwanzaa, I think I made mention of PAPO. That was the Pan-African Peoples Organization, and they had a school. Two of the names that come to mind on the board of directors that helped found that is Dr. Oba Tshaka. Many people.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, I know Oba Tshaka. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And brothers like Bidi Mtambuzi. So they established a school in San Francisco over there. I think it was on Fulton Street, and again, where those principles of the Nguza Saba are taught year round, and that's a key thing about how we continue to ensure Kwanzaa's incorporation, because it's not just about the holiday. It is based on those principles, which, as you said, Brother Oshie, those are to be embraced and become part of your lifestyle, become your value system. So you're doing that all year long, and then at the end of the year, that's the culmination when you can reflect and affirm what have you done. Now we have cause for a celebration called Kwanzaa.
Right.
And earlier when we started the discussion, the brother was saying about the distinction of Kwanzaa having the two A's. And I think that's an important part if people want to throw darts at our creativity and our self-determination that we, you know, did in fact say this is our holiday.
That's right.
So Kwanzaa when they say, well, there's no holiday such as Kwanzaa, that it means first fruits. In Swahili, that is exactly correct. There's not a holiday on the continent called that was called Kwanzaa when it came to us. But the word Kwanzaa coming out of Kiswahili does mean first fruits. The distinction now is that the holiday has the two A's brought to us by the children. And I love for us to keep that part in mind and to share that with the children and to let them know this is for you, and so that you can continue it for generations to come. When they know that from day one they were involved and it was their creativity and their self-determination that pin the word Kwanzaa as it is, that is, you can see their eyes light up, you know, just from knowing that bit of the history. So again, having it all around you definitely helps to ensure that it's going to happen. So you have the schools, Papo School, you had another one, Shule Mandela, which was in East Palo Alto. The founder of that school, you know, Mama Nabantu Akuonde, and she now is in Atlanta and continues to teach. And, you know, and she's definitely one of our cherished elders.
Yes,
you know?
She is. Yes, she is.
And she's active doing everything.
Yeah, she just got back. Yeah, she just got back from Ghana for the Pan-African Conference. In Ghana.
Right. So, you know, so she was there as an educator, making certain that it was taught in her schools. There was Ile Omide School, which is run by the Wose Community Church, the African Children's Advanced Learning Center, all of these and more. I just don't have a total list right now. But, you know, those schools were making sure that the principals are taught year round. And what we would see at the community Kwanzaa celebrations, one of the pieces that was so different, the Papo School would do a math and science demonstration. You know, because we know we love our cultural arts expression. You know, we have a lot of that, and we need it all the time. That's the ushering in of the ancestors' energy with those drums. We have a lot more to us as children, you know, as children. And so they would get up, and they would actually, you know, give you history and math and science as a part of their demonstration of the power of their Africanness. So I love those Kwanzaa celebrations, to see them get to the, and then it was the chalkboards that were being used, and they could break it all down, you know, equations and theories and so forth, and then tell you the connections, tell you how it was rooted in Africa, you know, so they had that understanding of where that knowledge came from, which does what? When you connect your learning to something back to yourself, it makes education a more exciting process for the students too. So those were some of the schools. And then you had the community based organizations as well. So and I know another person I wanted to mention with those schools were some of the women. Siba Sheshe was one of the sisters with the Papo schools, and she would teach the songs along with Queen Mother Jasiri Kadiri, because the music is an important part of transmitting messages. So just as we heard what you were playing, and the brother talked about the ones who gave us the red, black, and green, I think red, black, and green song is probably the national Kwanzaa song from coast to coast. I think everyone has learned that one. Heba Sheshe, Queen Mother Jasiri Kadiri, Upesi M. Tambuzi, and Upesi, along with Aminifu Carr and Mama Napatu, these women and a whole cadre of other sisters, they established that Sisters of Tomorrow Female Rites of Passage program, another vehicle to reach the young people and teach them those principles as well as a part of their initiation into young womanhood. They have to learn that. So, you know, just so many wonderful ways that we have to understand it's not just waiting for the 7 days of Kwanzaa for the celebration, but in fact, teaching and making this part of our lifestyle. Musically, the Wose, I would say, the Wose community really helped spread the message of Kwanzaa through music. They had the Stones of Fire, and that was the music ensemble, and they would go around singing those songs, including that the Red, Black, and the Green, mm-hmm. And many other songs. Quite a number of songs, written by the senior minister, Makalisi Ososuwande. And later, in more contemporary part of the history of Kwanzaa, Minister Makalisi and a group called the Sankofa Singers, they compiled a CD of songs. And that's probably accessible on YouTube as well, the Sankofa Singers. Mm-hmm. But I can't stress enough how important it is to do as Mama Queen Mother Kwanzaa said, to start it in the home, learn those songs, teach those principles year round, and make the connection for the children that if you are following these principles year round, then when it's time for the Kwanzaa holiday, you really have something to be proud of and to share with your family and your community. You know, one elder brother at the community Kwanzaa would tell the children each year, "I want you to put a penny in the jar," and for every day, and it's at the end, you have your 365 pennies. You bring that to me, and I'm going to reward you. But not only put your penny in the jar, when you place it in there, he said, you need to think about one of the principles. Okay. You know, just say it to yourself. So can you imagine every day a child just putting that one penny and saying one of the principles?
Mm-hmm.
That level of affirming and instilling it into mm-hmm. them. So, you know, those are examples of the history and the vision that went way past what was initially put out. It has evolved, and we are just constantly creative people looking at how do we ensure that this stays alive for generations to come, because it is good for us.
I think what happened in that formation, we understood intrinsically, intuitively, that this is about us. This is who we are. And so not all of us embraced it, because unfortunately we've been so deeply indoctrinated with the Urugu virus, you know, that we can embrace it. But what happens when those that do, it is not about, once again, December 26th to January 1st, but it is about us as a people 365 days. About transforming our community, our personal selves within our family. Because, like I said, that was the first taste of Kwanzaa I had, was not in a communal setting, but in a family setting, which was very beautiful. You know, in fact, at that time, people sipped from the Kakumbe Chai Umoja, too, you know. And of course, a little bit later, it only became a gesture, and understandable. But by the same token, it has taken off. And in fact, like I said, we've had some really nice community Kwanzaa celebrations, a lot of good entertainment, a lot of good presenters, and so forth and so on. And Brother Nchawi, what do you, in terms of the Kwanzaa celebration and its evolution, you know, in terms of changing the lives of our people, what do you feel most important is, what is most important in terms of our observation of Kwanzaa?
Well, I think the most important aspects are, first of all, you know, as we say, you know, the coming together of the people. You know, the idea that this is a collective celebration, you know, not an individual one, whether it's done in your home, whether it's done in a, you know, large institution. You know, we have institutions in New York that have attempted to try to, again, do things with Kwanzaa, and we have to be careful, because there's always the possibility of some kind of co-optation of Kwanzaa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know the Museum of Natural History here in New York has a Kwanzaa celebration. I remember many years ago, I guess this would have been back in the 1970s, in the Wall Street Journal, they had an article about Kwanzaa, okay, which was just a way to, you know, show corporations that this mm-hmm. might be something
right.
that they might want to do. As a matter of fact, there was an organization that did a kind of commercial Kwanzaa. They would do it in in the Javits Center, which is an exhibition center in the middle of Manhattan. And one of the sponsors was Mobil Oil. They had a T-shirt, which I kept. I think I have the T-shirt. They had a mug, with Kwanzaa on it, and then the Mobil corporate logo. So we've got to be careful that Kwanzaa is not co-opted. The other things I think that are important to remember in terms of the celebration is that, first of all, it's cultural, but it's got to be political. That we can't just go ahead, people go ahead and get dressed up in African garb and walk around and say they're African for 7 days. That this has to be a commitment that people make on a regular basis. All right. Sometimes you see people during Kwanzaa that you haven't seen for the entire year. We hope that that's just because they came from somewhere else. But too many of our people are into this thing of, we're going to dress up as Africans. Not that we are Africans.
Right. It's like a costume.
All the time.
Right. It's like a costume. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's important. So it's got to be political. It's got to be politicized so that we understand that we're doing this as, first of all, an act of self-determination, but also that as we go ahead and reflect, because one of the things we do during this last part of the year is to reflect, to see what we can actually go ahead and do to begin to better change our condition as a people. All right. That has to be part of what we do during Kwanzaa. We just come and celebrate and, have a good time. I mean, that's all right, but it's not enough. Then, as I said, also for some people who have these spiritual yearnings, we have to, see how we can accommodate them in some kind of way. Kwanzaa is not religious. And I think that's important because it allows people of various religions to go ahead and celebrate Kwanzaa. So we have Muslims who celebrate Kwanzaa. We have Christians. We have people who practice African traditional religion. We have people who are atheists or agnostics who go ahead and celebrate Kwanzaa. But at the same time, there needs to be some acknowledgement of our spirituality, so that people understand that, as African people, we are a spiritual people. We always have been. We always will be. And, those are the kinds of things. Yes, there's ritual involved sometimes, but the ritual can be very simple and something that, of course, always involves children. For instance, if you have candles to be lit, then it's always good sometimes to let the children to light the candles, so that they internalize what this is, that they have participated in what's taking place. And in doing so, it becomes an extension of who they are. So, I mean, these are some of the elements. Mm-hmm. We in New York, due to Baba Yusuf Iman, we have these songs. So wherever we are, we'll sing Praise the Red, the Black, and the Green. We'll sing the Seven Principles song. We'll do those particular things, have everybody participate, because in its collectivity, it's got to be participatory also. Mm-hmm. People have to participate. We make it simple for folks so that if they've never heard the song or sung the song before, they can do it. And, these become some of the important elements, as we move forward. And we have to say that based upon, what I've been hearing over the last couple of weeks, is that Kwanzaa seems to be in a good place right now.
Oh, I see.
That, while we had maybe some doubts or whatever at different times, mm-hmm. As there were people who were criticizing Kwanzaa, connecting Kwanzaa directly to Dr. Karenga and saying because of some issues with him that it was something that, people should not embrace. But it seems that we're to an extent slightly past that. And that Kwanzaa, especially in regards to these next generations, it seems to be in relatively good hands.
I agree. And I know that there were some misgivings about Malala Karenga. I mean, once again, I mentioned earlier, I was on a call with Jesse Lee Peterson and this Congress, right-wing congressperson who put out there that we shouldn't celebrate Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is a fake holiday. Kwanzaa was started by a criminal, a felon. And so, I mean, all kinds of stuff that was out there. And so my good...
Yeah, we would have to say that Christmas was started by a bunch of criminals. I mean, wouldn't we? I mean, Christ was himself crucified, you know, because he was seen as a criminal. Yeah. You know, those who were his disciples had to go underground because they were criminalized.
Yep.
So, I mean, come on.
And you're right.
But, of course, you know, white folks always say stuff, you know, without understanding what it is they're saying, you know, at all. You know, because, I mean, we could say, you know, that for sure. You know, we could say all, you know, we could say Islam, you know, in regards to where Islam comes from, that it was started by a criminal.
Anybody who goes against the establishment, it would be considered a criminal.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that they're treated. You know, right. We have to remember that, you know, as we talk about it, you know, we look, you know, there was the Hegira where, you know, Muhammad had to go ahead and flee because he was criminalized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are all these things that happen. So, you know, the idea that, well, Kwanzaa was started by a criminal, you know, it's like, come on, man, please. Well, you know,
but also
again,
too,
this is just white people who don't know history. They don't even know their history.
No, they don't. And they don't care either.
That just shows you how bizarre, you know, these folks are. You know, we see that, you know, this guy in the White House, you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, if I was a white supremacist or white folks who supported this guy, I'd be embarrassed. I mean, I would have to. I mean, he's just embarrassing, man.
Yeah.
You know, this is crazy. Can't spell, can't think, can't talk. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to just interject there about that comment that Kwanzaa is a made-up holiday. Now, that's one of the most illogical statements that I hear, and it's said by all people, not just white people, even our people. All holidays are made up.
Yes, everything is made up. Everything that happens, religions, everything is made up.
Everything is made up. So it's just a matter of time, you know, that once it has been anchored long enough, it won't be called made up because it will have been in existence so long that people don't know a point of time other than looking at it on record as saying it was 1966. But it will just be so ingrained into the society they don't think about the start date. But that's like one of the silliest statements when someone tells me, oh, well, that's just a made up holiday. I said, well, what's made up? How is it different from all the other made up holidays? You know, it's just your decision that if you want to accept and embrace this tradition that is healthy for us on all levels. Economically, it makes sense. You know, when you look at how it was structured, politically, it makes sense. You know, culturally, spiritually, every single aspect of our existence, to me, when I look at it, it makes sense that we should have a holiday like this. And then the other part, in regards to commercialization of Kwanzaa, you know, and I hear a lot of the concerns over that. I don't even worry about that aspect because, again, Kwanzaa is the holiday, but the root of what we are embracing is the Nguza Saba. So as we continue to instill those principles, we know that's ours. You know, and we're going to have a celebration at the end of the year to say what we have done in regards to living those principles. If other people want to celebrate, I don't really have a problem with it. I'm not going to their multicultural celebrations because of my love and adoration and preference to be with my own. But, you know, people have been going to Cinco de Mayo, what's the other one, St. Patrick's, Halloween. They've been going to any and every type of celebration that involves people of all ethnicities. It still happens, whether it's yours or not. It's the principles to me that are important. You know, when I do Kwanzaa awareness presentations, which are just something that I like to do from my heart because it's important to spread the word, I'll do that in public settings. I don't know who's going to show up. You know, and what it teaches them is any of those people who are there, oh, this is something that's good for folks and is rooted where? In us, in African people. You cannot take that away. You cannot commercialize what is born in me. You can't do that. You know, so I don't operate out of that fear factor of the commercialization of it. You know, I don't have to like when some group comes along and decides they want to tag their name onto it. They don't have the power to take it from us. So that's why I don't really have a fear about that part. Where my emphasis and energy is in being proactive in instilling the principles and the value of the Nguza Saba. If as long as we continue to do that, then whatever little pop-up celebrations happen here or there by folks that are not of African descent, it's just going to be this a little festivity. It's not going to be a takeover of the culture. That's what that is. So. You know, and folks are always going to have adoration of what we create as African people. We know that. You know, yeah. So we respect it.
Right. Well, there was a piece that was going around where, you know, the Nguza Saba is what it is, and so anybody can celebrate Kwanzaa because of the principles that it espouses. And so, you know, Latinos, Caucasian, whatever cultural groups can celebrate Kwanzaa and shape it and fashion it in their image and in their interest, which is true. But for me, it's more important, not just in a celebration, but instilling those principles into our everyday lives. That's what I'm adamant about. I mean, as a person who believes in self-determination, as a person who is a Pan-Africanist, cultural nationalist, as a person who embraces the love of Africa and Africans, you know, whether somebody wants to learn Kwanzaa and shape and fashion that for their community, I have no problem with that. And even if somebody comes to a community celebration, you know, I ain't got no problem with that. But nobody's going to dictate, nobody's going to influence how we celebrate Kwanzaa and how we instill those principles into our everyday lives. I think that's what's important.
I agree.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have you guys are doing such an outstanding job. We have no callers. Nobody. They just want to listen, you know, and that's great, too, because you guys are doing an outstanding job. In terms of the what's happening on the East Coast, and I know in our other conversation, Brother Mchawi, Brother Bashir, we talked about, and you were putting things in chronological order in terms of Kwanzaa's beginning. You were going to write something, I remember, last year or year before. Is that still in?
Well, you know, what I did, and I've done it a couple of times, is I've done a PowerPoint presentation, which
right,
I call
a
People's History of Kwanzaa. And, you know, of course, I mean, it's now interesting to look at, you know, what happened on the West Coast.
Yeah, now you got to incorporate that. You got to incorporate that. That's an outstanding
No question.
Thing. Yeah.
You know, no question at all. So, you know, I'll definitely have to be in touch, mm-hmm. you know, as we talk about this. And then I know that, you know, while, you know, in the middle of the country, in places like Chicago.
Right.
Where, you know, brothers like Hannibal Afric and
mm-hmm.
Conrad.
Conrad Worrell.
Conrad Worrell, yeah.
All
these folks
mm-hmm.
have been instrumental in going ahead and, you know, providing a solid foundation for Kwanzaa in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, we've got to look at the South as well and see, you know, not only in terms of Atlanta, which is, of course, very cosmopolitan, but to see what has happened in places like Mississippi and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, the deeper South, you know, see if in fact, you know, there are you know, elements of Kwanzaa. You know, we would think so in terms of places like Jackson, Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
you know, where
right.
You know, you had the Republic of New Africa, you know, as being very strong, and then the Malcolm X grassroots movement.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we've gotta, you know, kind of see if we can chronicle a lot of this.
Right, and Chukwe Lumumba's son now is the
right.
mayor of Jackson. We got a caller, 443-443. Good afternoon.
Yes, this is Brother Sanifu from Baltimore.
How you doing, dear brother?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I just want to point out that if you look at the Nguzo Saba, you'll see that it is a memorial to the martyrdom of Brother Malcolm X, the way it is structured. Because if you remember, when Malcolm was killed, he was prepared for burial by the Unity Funeral Home in Harlem. And he was his service was conducted at the Faith Temple, Church of God in Christ. And that is the framework for the Nguzo Saba, unity and faith.
Okay. Okay. Well, see, I think that, you know, there's a number of us who embrace Kwanzaa, but realize that the theologies that we have, they are so strong that anything cultural is rejected or not or dismissed. In fact, Malcolm said it best. Malcolm said, when I come to the community to do the work that needs to be done in terms of organizing, unifying, and so forth, I'm going to leave Islam back home. I'm going to leave it in my back pocket, because he said, Islam is my religious philosophy. But if I impose that or start to state that, then people who are Christian will start to state that, and other ones who Black Hebrew Israelites or whatever, whatever, and we cannot come together. So what was most important for us as African people is that we come together as African people and respect the religions that we have, and those who have those proselytizing religions, Islam and Christianity, you know, hold them in your back pocket.
This is in reference to Malcolm's politics, not his religion.
Okay.
He was talking about Africa.
Yes.
You see? And so I think it, because much of what, if you look at the Kawita philosophy, much of it is comes from or is taken from Brother Malcolm. You know, so the Nguzo Saba, what I'm simply pointing out is that it is a frame in his it's a memorial to his life.
Okay.
Actually to his martyrdom.
Well, there's no doubt about it. He was a Pan-Africanist. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I don't care what Spike Lee had to say.
Pan-Africanist and a socialist.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And so we celebrate. I know I do. I celebrate his life. He's probably one of the greatest heroes of our people. One of a number of brothers and sisters definitely need to look at.
That's all I wanted to say, brother.
All right. Thank you for your call, and continue to listen here every all Monday, right. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
All right.
We're here at African Perspective. Appreciate it.
And when we go back to, this is why it's so important to me that our Kwanzaa is celebrated in the home, where we have an opportunity for the conversation of what it means on a personal level. At the big community Kwanzaa celebration, you're not going to get that engagement, that one-on-one engagement. And I'm thinking specifically, like, for years I would invite my grandma to come to the family Kwanzaa celebration. And she said no, you know, as a Christian woman, she did not want to come. And one year, something changed in her heart, and she decided to come. Oh, she had such a good, just heartfelt laugh. And in a good way, when I say that, she said, this is what you all think you came up with something new? We're doing this. You're just celebrating who we are. And she's, you know, and she's from Louisiana, and she was telling me stories about how they would walk with their candles to light the way, and, you know, just different stories from her own childhood. And she said she hadn't even thought about those things. But sitting in that family circle and hearing what we said, when we asked the children, what does unity mean to you? Mm-hmm. You know, going through each principle and just asking, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took on a whole different definition for her. And so, you know, she was able to say, this is beautiful. I'm glad that you all are doing this. You know, if this has brought more meaningfulness to you and the gatherings, let's continue to do this. You know, but many years, you know, inviting her to go to the community concert or even to come to the house, because one, you have the stigma, you know, the suspicion about that black candle.
which is a good documentary by Malefia Ketiasani's son, The Black Candle, which is a very good documentary on the history and of course the celebration of Kwanzaa. Go ahead, Sajakina.
Yes, but you know, but because it was done in the home in a safe setting where you could have the conversation in a loving way, transformation happened. And to have the validation of the matriarch of the family, that has an impact.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, it was both ways. You know, for her to say, I love what you all are doing. This makes me feel good and proud. And then for her to say, and keep doing this. So for those younger ones that were kind of like, you know, is the family, are we just an odd family? You know, what are we about? This, you know, your family has many tentacles, so you may be two or three of the family members that are deep and embracing of Kwanzaa, and then you have the others that are like, yeah, they into that stuff. But to have that validation from an elder meant everything, you know, because this is the person that inside of our Kwanzaa tradition, we say what? Honor our elders.
Right.
Right? And so to have that meant the world to us. You know, one opinion somebody might say shouldn't make a difference. Oh, it does when it's your elder that you love that does everything for family. So, you know, to me, that's one of the cornerstones of in making sure that Kwanzaa will be around, is that we have to have time to have the Kwanzaa dinners, the Kwanzaa conversations at home with our children, with our elders, with our family members who may not have an understanding of it yet. And we don't want them to get their introduction and their understanding from, you know, some of the kind of crooked sources out there that just make up anything. So do it. I just encourage people who are listening to look at hosting your Kwanzaa celebration in the home, you know, in addition to going out and having a wonderful time at the community celebrations. In the Bay Area, that's what we would do, 6 days of community Kwanzaa, and the final day, Imani, was reserved for you to do at home.
That's a good idea.
You know, have us competing to get out to
right.
a community one. So for years, there were no community Kwanzaa celebrations on the last day.
Well, we
Imani
in Milwaukee, we had when we started having citywide community Kwanzaas, we would have the Feast of Faith, the Kamaru, the feast on that last day, you know, and inviting the community out to at least two places I knew that were celebrating Kwanzaa and would offer food to the people who came and do potluck and so forth. So, I mean, like I said, that's the beauty of Kwanzaa. There is no set way to do it. What is best for the community, what is best for the family, what is best for us as a people, the bottom line is that you reflect on that. But what's most important is you instill those principles into your everyday life. When you think about being unified, you think about holding your brothers and your sisters, each of us, accountable towards one another in a unifying manner. And then you look at self-determination, being able to name yourself and do for ourselves, you know, and be serious about it. And then, of course, collective work, just helping one another, helping a brother. Maybe they need to clean out the garage or the basement, collective work responsibility. And then, of course, spending your money with each other, supporting. Here we have a Cafe Ulu. I mean, there should be no way that business should not be thriving if our consciousness was what it should be. You know, to spend money. Also, too, here in Atlanta, we don't have one damn supermarket that we own that is owned and controlled by us. With all these millions of people with serious money. And then, of course, our purpose as a people is to share with one another, love one another, help one another. The young people's purpose is to listen and learn, you know. And then, of course, our creativity, and not just the creativity of us as singers and dancers and sports players and so forth, but the creativity that created one of the greatest civilizations on the planet in the Nile Valley. That creativity, and of course, the Imani, the faith. Now, and not just a faith in an entity higher than ourselves, but a faith in us and a faith in our own being and of who we are and a faith in each other. So, I mean, that I can't stress that enough. What do you think, Brother Nchawi?
Well, you know, I would be, you know, definitely in agreement. And you know, I just want to go back a minute because when it was talked about the candles, you know, we have to look at, you know, the evolution and controversy in regards to the lighting of candles. When we first started celebrating Kwanzaa in the East Coast, we used the colors red, black, and green. So we had the candles starting with red, black, green, red, black, green, red. That's what we would do. We would go ahead and alternate it that way. Then, of course, there was the thing in terms of the red, three green, and one black. And then even sometimes now, as far as the ritual itself, is when is the black candle lit? You know, some people, of course, go ahead and light it first, but then others light it last, you know, representing the idea of faith in our people that black candle should actually go ahead and be lit last. You know, the irony of all of that is that, you know, it's literally all good.
Exactly.
You know, we look in terms of the red, black, and green. Many of us clearly reject the US flag, which has the colors inverted.
Right.
Which we think is a kind of like a desecration.
Hey, hold on, Brother Nchawi, because you are correct. And ironically, Melanica Ringo was in Milwaukee and unveiled the stamp when they took the veiling off, and we seen how the colors were, which was a black, red, and green. I was like, wow, what is that? You know? And I know that the United States Postal Service paid him. I know he got paid off. You know, I understand that. But still.
But, you know, he says that this is the US flag. And then when you look at it in terms of Marcus Garvey resurrecting the red, black, and green and making that the flag of one of the largest, if not the largest, mass-based African organization ever, and then looking at the US flag, which when we talk about 1966, there were seven children there, which is more significant?
Exactly.
Historically and otherwise.
Exactly.
So, you know, many of us, I mean, we reject the US flag in regards to it. The colors, of course, red, black, and green, as shown on the liberation flag, as shown on the flag that, you know, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey resurrected for us as a people, that's what we use. And in terms of the US flag, fine. If, you know, you're a member of the US organization, that's cool. But for everybody else,
right,
we're not down with that.
It really. Exactly. And that's what happened, you know. And like I said, I know he got paid, but there was a big uproar about that and all the other stuff with Dr. Karinga, as well as Malefi Asante. Those two gentlemen, you know, have kind of like distanced themselves from our struggle, from some things that they have done personally. You know, in fact, I'm going to be honest with you. If Malefi Asante is anywhere in the vicinity, I'll go bust him out for what he has done. And there are people who went to Temple University who will say the same thing. I mean, I'll tell you two people right now, Greg Kamathi Carr, who is the vice president of ASCAC, and Mario Beatty, who is the president of ASCAC, who are teaching at Howard University, but who are doctoral students at Temple, you know, and the personal thing for me is that in Kansas City, they had an African-centered school controlled by the brothers and sisters. Many of the members were in the National Black United Front, an organization that G.T. Wausi helped found. And these brothers and sisters in that community started this school. And Malefi Kethi Asante helped disrupt that school. I'm not going to go into details because we don't have that much time. But and I got this straight from a brother whose integrity is beyond reproach, Brother Ajamu. And he told me all the things that went down. And I'm like, psh. In fact, there was the dude that did it, a Negro who came into the Kansas City school district as a superintendent with the express purpose of disrupting that school because a Caucasian on the school board did not want that to happen. And they paid. In fact, the brother told me, he said, Malefi Asante came into Kansas City in the dark of night to collect a six-figure check, and he was out of town before sunrise. I mean, this is ridiculous. But that's what happens. So I'm saying is that we must make sure that how we are presenting Kwanzaa to our community, to our family, is in the best practices for our people, you know, in terms of helping liberate the hearts and minds of our people. Because, I mean, that's more importantly than celebration. Yeah, we need celebration, you know, and that's great. And that's a lot of celebration going on. You just had Thanksgiving. Now you're going to have Christmas and Kwanzaa and Hanukkah and whatever. But what's most important is the transformation of African people from the pawns that we have become to the players in the world that we need to be. That's what's most important as far as I'm concerned. So we only got a couple of minutes. Sister Akane, a few words, and then Brother Mchawi, a few words, and then close the program. Sister Akane.
I'm just thankful, grateful, and appreciative to have this opportunity to share about Queen Mother of Kwanzaa, Mama Makenya, originally, again, from the Bay Area. And, you know, I invite people to do their research and their learning so they can, you know, be grounded in the information and become, you know, comfortable and confident. And what were those four C's that you gave us, Brother Oshie?
Yeah.
You know, that they can develop their consciousness. Because it's a evolving is an ongoing thing for us. We should never become content in where we are. You know, we want to be able to rise to our highest heights, somewhere what we talk about in Us Lifting Us, being mm-hmm. able to get to the top of Kilimanjaro together.
Right.
So, you know, I just encourage us to have continue to expand our understanding and to share what we know with others and not to ridicule them mm-hmm. For what they don't know. Yes, our children are born into this information and our grandchildren, but we have to remember there was a time we didn't have it.
Right.
And so, you know, let's be patient and open to sharing the knowledge that we have, because that'll help us grow into becoming one day those wise elders. So that's what I would like to say. And to wish everyone a wonderful winter solstice, a Merry Christmas, a Happy Kwanzaa, whatever this time period of special significance has for you, that it'll be wonderful.
And safe.
And thank you, Asante Sana, for allowing me to share with you today.
Always, Sister Kane, appreciate you. My good brother, Brother Basir Mchawi.
Baba Yusuf Wali Yahya used to say, at this time he would say, "Is that time again?" And it is. It's yeah. Kwanzaa time.
Right on.
So we want everybody you know, out there who's listening and who's, for that matter, not listening to begin to go ahead and celebrate and observe Kwanzaa in the way that they do, to reflect on the principles, to try to adopt those particular principles in their mm-hmm. everyday practice, so that, you know, we as a people can move forward with dignity and respect.
Ashe.
That's what it's about.
Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this. I appreciate my guests coming and talking about Kwanzaa. As you know, I just don't wait for December 26th to January 1st. I celebrate Kwanzaa every day of my life because I instill those principles on an everyday basis. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. That's a Dr. John Henry Clark quote. Brothers and sisters, we appreciate you. Once again, thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodio. Abibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, Abibi Fahodio.
back to Africa. To know all the reasons that we're spread over the diaspora. You know our culture keeps us connected to our motherland. To all our brothers and sisters, let us now extend our hand. Cause it's a way to teach the principles that we must learn to reap the wealth of every seed we sow. The Nguzo Saba gives us values and a way to show we're building a future we can harvest so the world will know.
We come from
all the things our freedom consists of. We share the purpose our freedom must unite for. Determine for ourselves what we choose to live or die for. We have the faith, the creative mind. It comes to us through our ancestral bloodline. Collective work, responsibility for our global economics and political destiny.
I want to say that I'm an African. I celebrate Kwanzaa because I'm an African.